Today's episode is with Rebecca Allen. Rebecca and I know each other through the wonderful world of Facebook, actually. I think I came across her maybe when I first joined B-School or when she joined B-School. Anyway, she has been an avid listener of Carlosophies and is a self-confessed fangirl of mine, which I find incredibly strange because I think she's pretty cool. And then for her to be a fangirl of mine feels really weird. Anyway, won't go there. Today's conversation is a really good one. We have some really great in-depth conversations about, you know, the labels that we put on ourselves or don't put on ourselves because of other people having those labels. Makes more sense in the conversation, trust me. And we have this really great little conversation about what changed for her recently. She went from really feeling like she was pushing shit uphill, you know, one step forward and 10 steps back. And what shifted for her to go from where she was to now just a few months later, working solely for herself with no side hustle going on and making really good money consistently. So really excited to share this one. I just want to put a little side note on this because we do talk about Beck's sister a little bit, and it occurred to me that perhaps you don't know who she is. So Beck's younger sister is Leonie Dawson. Leonie is a successful online entrepreneur, and you may be familiar already with her. So we mentioned her a few times. I just wanted to put that out there so that you had some context around who we were talking about. And now let's dive in. Welcome to Carlosophies, Stories Behind Success. I'm Carly Nimmo. It's so easy to fall into comparisonitis as an entrepreneur, and it can be paralyzing. In my own journey, I've come to understand that regardless of your level of success, fame, or fortune, we're all suffering from the same stories of fear, struggle, and failure. So let's talk about it.
Storytelling time. Oh, okay. Let's go from birth. I grew up in a very old-fashioned, traditional country family, I suppose, an upbringing. My father was a farmer, cattle farmer, and a bit of hay in there as well. And mum was a home mother for the most part until all the kids were in school. And there was five of us, so quite a big family, as well as my grandfather living with us until he died of leukemia. So it was quite a big country house, and there was a lot of people always coming and going, like farm labourers and things like that. And I was the middle child and the eldest daughter of the five. So I was relied on a lot to help, essentially, to help mum. And not only that, my eldest brother had a disability. He was born with cerebral palsy, so he had extra needs, and everyone had needs because they do, but it's, you know, the loudest, the squeakiest wheel gets the most attention, gets the grease. And I did not get the grease. I was very, very quiet, very, very shy, like painfully shy. I would not talk to people. Even as a teenager and even early 20s, I remember, you know, I'd be going somewhere with mum, going to the shops, and I had to go in and ask for something, and I'd just be sitting there thinking, all right, how am I going to get out of the car and ask a shop assistant for what I needed? And mum would be like, do you want me to go in for you? I'm like, yes, please, because she knew, bless her. But I was always the quiet one. I call myself the rock, in inverted commas, Rebecca the Rock, because everyone just could always rely on me. They'd ask me for something. I'd always be helping. I'd always be there. I'm always quiet. I was always listening. So I was Rebecca the Rock. And with the eldest brother with a disability and then the youngest, you know, being the youngest and doing lots of screaming and everyone else in between, I was really ridiculously shy. So then going to school, I was always a book nerd. Mum read us to us every night, bless them. They weren't overly... It was a harsh upbringing in the sense we never had much money. We ate from our veggie patch. If we didn't have food in our veggie patch, we didn't eat, essentially. And not that they were overly intelligent or unintelligent parents, but it was more whatever mum could teach us, it was through books. So she would take us to the library every second week, and my head was always jammed in a book. Like getting up in the morning, riding the bus to school, my head was in a book. At every lunch break, my head was in a book. Bus ride home, book. After homework, book. It was books 24/7. I didn't really do anything else. Didn't really have friends. I'd have one friend probably per year, and that was just somebody to follow around at school. I was not a leader. I was definitely a follower, and helping mum and dad with what I needed to help them with. And that was essentially my whole life versus, you know, my sister, my sister that's less than 2 years younger than me, Leonie, I was the closest to. And not that she was opposite. She was quite a reader as well, but she was more artistic. She would write poetry. She would write songs. She would be drawing and painting and sketching and things like that. And I was never artistic, in inverted commas. I never thought so. I never considered myself a writer or something special or an entrepreneur. I remember having conversations with my sister, because we're always talking, obviously, about different things that we could do. I remember when we were about 5 or 6 years old, sitting on the front trampoline underneath our big, I think, the gum trees with the eucalyptus gum nuts on.
Oh, yeah.
That they grow. And the tree was covered in thousands of seeds. So we're like, we could sell those seeds, and for 1 cent each, 100 seeds, we'd have, a dollar. We could make a killing. We could sell it to the neighbors. Didn't actually occur to us what would they use them for, and they didn't have their own seeds already.
Well, you used to be able to stick like little googly eyes and stuff on them. My nana used to make these things called, so it was for like school, and you'd have your school fete or whatever, and she used to get the gum nuts and make them into a little guy, and then she'd knit a little scarf, and it would be like a Richmond Footy Club scarf, and it would be like, I'm a tiger nut.
That's cute. There's so a little cute. Arts and crafts. Yeah. I like that. Yeah, we hadn't gone along the lines of a craft item. As more people could, I don't know, plant them to build more trees, grow more trees. I don't know. But then a little bit older, and one of our pet dog died, and we had to buy a new pet dog, a German Shepherd. And I remember it costing $500, which is really expensive back then. And, you know, I remember hearing my parents talk about it, and I'm like, if we bred our own dogs, then we wouldn't have to pay for a dog and we could sell them. So I, you know, would be jotting down notes on how to do that. And then I'm like, okay, we've got to train the dogs. I don't actually like dogs. I'll get my sister to train them and I'll pay her $20. She'll love that. So I was outsourcing already for not my zone of genius. Another time I had an idea of emu farming. Emus, for some reason, were really hot back in the 90s sometime for two reasons. One, emu meat was becoming popular. It's now obviously gone, kind of like kangaroo meat's now insanely popular.
Yeah.
And also the emu eggs, making craft items out of them, like hand painting on them and things like that, and selling them at markets. So I wanted to have an emu farm. My dad was a cattle farmer, so it wasn't a far of a stretch. We had land, we had yards. We'll just jam some big birds in there. That's doable. And there was an emu farm up the road, and I wanted Dad to take me to, so I can ask them questions about emu farming, actually. And another time I wanted to start a photography business. They were teaching us how to use SLR camera, yeah, and black and white photography, but doing it in the old-fashioned way. This is before digital cameras, people. I'm not that freaking old.
I know. Well, I worked as a photographer. My first career was working as a photographer. So, and that was before, the reason I got out of it was because I couldn't handle the stress having to get everything perfect, you know, and potentially missing the moment. And, or because I worked in a photo lab too, I saw just how much went wrong, could potentially go wrong. Where with digital, there's no pressure. You can just take 10 million photos, you know, and short of your card, even if your card corrupts, you can generally get the stuff back. So there's way less pressure these days for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. So that was in the film photography when you started.
Yeah. So, and that was like, you know, it wasn't even, well, you know, it was probably 20 years ago now, but it doesn't feel like, you know, the olden days or anything.
No. I was watching a Facebook video of kids trying to work out a cassette player, a portable cassette player, how to open it, what it is, what to do with it, and how you got to press fast forward and guess how far to go fast forward to get to the next song. And I was talking about it, the hairdressers and the apprentice, I suppose, 19 years old, no idea what we're talking about.
Like, crazy, isn't it?
I'm not that old. Like when I went to school, high school, we had no computers, we had no mobile phones. Remember, small country town, so a little bit behind the city, but you know, it's not. Yeah, the world's very different.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. And even just in the last, you know, I mean, I've been running Killer Copy since what, 2003 or 2004, and life has changed so much since then. Like, I couldn't back then. That was only 13 years ago. But that seems like a long time, but it doesn't feel like a long time. But, you know, like, if I was to leave the office, there was no contacting me because we didn't have our phones attached to us with email. And you know, I'm writing my book at the moment and just even running on the beach. When was that? Like, even that was 7 years ago, which feels like fucking yesterday. But, there was no video on your phone. I had to run with a video camera. You know, it's like, it sounds so old and crusty and just isn't that long ago.
Yeah, it really isn't. It's changing. Changing
way
quickly.
Too fast. Side tangent.
Yeah, side tangent. Feeling old but not old. So high school. So grade A book nerd and square at school. I loved school because I was good at it. Like, you know, obviously traditional schooling is only good for about, you know, 20% of people that it's actually they get, you know, A's for, and I was an A+ type student. But leaving school, I hated school. I hated the social aspect of it. I was a very uncomfortable human being, a very quiet human being. I don't make friends easily. And not only that, like, high school in particular has this weird social protocol and platform that's just disgusting. Like, I had a quite negative experiences with yeah, I'll go female friends at school that they decided they didn't like me. So it was a kind of tradition at our school that they would kick you out of the group. We don't like you, you're kicked out of the group. So I had that happen to me, and that was quite actually devastating that I still struggle to this day to make friends because of that situation. Mm-hmm. So getting to the end of school, I'm like, I don't want to go to university. Like, what am I doing next? I don't want to go to university for the whole social aspect. I ended up getting an OP of 10, and I told my parents, I do not want to go to university. I don't know what to do, but I'm not going to university. And at that time, I had actually been working at my auntie's bakery for probably 4 years, since 14 years old, as a junior shop assistant, so cleaning out the back and then serving customers, of course. And actually, when I started, 14 years old, painfully shy, really hated talking to people. It took, I think, 9 months to get my auntie to encourage me to serve the customers. And apparently when I started serving customers, I refused to talk to them. I would just add up what they wanted on the
cash register.
Thank you. On the cash register, and I'd expect them to read it off the till themselves and give me the money. I wouldn't talk to them. So I did learn a lot in that I did come out of my shell a little bit. I was quite good at customer service. Like, I just needed to be taught a script and what to say, and I was quite productive, like highly productive and very fast worker and a very clean worker. That I'd been working my bakery or my auntie's bakery for 4 years, and when I left school, I just decided to stay at the bakery. I said, hey, can I just keep my shifts? Because normally she expects people to move on after at the end of high school. And so I just got to keep my shifts. And then when somebody else left, I got more shifts. So I stayed working at the bakery. And I don't know that I chose to, other than lack of options. And I had no other idea of what else I wanted to do. So I left home at 18 and moved into a flat, which was literally one block away from the bakery, and worked as a shop assistant. I became, obviously, a senior shop assistant, and then my auntie would start taking day trips and holidays, so I became like a relief manager and assistant manager to her. So looking after a 24-hour, 7 days a week bakery with probably 12 staff members.
It's a pretty full-on business, isn't it, bakery? Like, because it is. Mm-hmm. It's open all crazy hours of the day and night, and mm-hmm. the bit that we're there is only a tiny little portion of what's actually going on.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And it's all on your feet too. Like, Most people have a romantic idea about opening a bakery or a cupcake shop or even a cafe, which is quite common, but they have no idea about the before and after. You're not sitting there, you know, sipping on coffees and eating cupcakes all day. It's really, really hard work, 12 hours a day, 6 to 7 days per week, and on your feet. People don't understand. Standing on your feet for 12 hours a day is extremely painful until you get used to it. It took me 2 years to get used to it. So that's something that comes naturally to me as well, but most people don't understand that. So when I was like a relief manager for the bakery, she'll go away for up to 6 weeks at a time. I can get a phone call at midnight, the baker going, you know, I've run out of eggs, things like that. And I'm like, crap, like stuff that's got to be sorted all day, every day. And then pays and then prepping the, you know, Sundays for the next day of work. Yeah. So it was hard work. But to be fair, I enjoyed it and I didn't know what else to do.
So do you feel like, were you super organized? Because I, like, seeing you online, you are, like, crazy, ridiculous, organized. And, like, me, so not. I'm just a real more, way more fly by the seat of my pants. But you, you know, you have some really great tools for measuring things and, you know, tracking and all that kind of jazz, which is something that does not come naturally to me whatsoever. So do you feel that that was something that you learned through your time working in the bakery? Or do you think that was something that you, a gift that you already kind of just naturally had?
That's a good question. I think I'm already, I said, a right-hand brain, that I'm naturally analytical and practical and straight down the line and, you know, take steps 1, 2, 3, or 4, and 5. And if somebody gives me the, you know, steps and I think I can make them better, I do. So I kind of already had that. But then within the bakery and under my auntie's tuition, I suppose, training me, yes, I become really productive. Like, she prized productivity. Like, you are moving, you are working your ass off. There's no sitting down. If you can do it faster or better and save a couple of seconds, you do that. So I got better and better at tracking my time and productivity and output and things like that, because it was all could be measured and all could be improved. So, yeah, I did get highly productive under at the bakery, essentially. And it was about 23 or 24 years old when one of Mum's friends asked me, you know, what am I going to do with my life? I'm like, And she goes, why don't you do, I don't know. Like, why don't you do an apprenticeship? Why don't you get a qualification at the bakery? I'm like, well, the main reason is because, well, now I'm an adult, then I've got quite a lot of expenses, and an apprenticeship I would not be earning enough. So my parents actually offered to pay me additional $100 or $200 per week for a year so I could do my apprenticeship. And so I signed up as a apprentice baker and pastry cook to learn both sides of the bakery. And the idea was to fast track it and do it as an adult-based apprenticeship, because by that time I'd been in the bakery for 10 years. I'd done a lot of cake decorating in that time and a lot of kind of the cookies and slices and biscuits and things like that. I hadn't done pastry, as in puff pastries for pies and sausage rolls, etc., and I hadn't never touched bread, that aspect, so that would be covered in the apprenticeship. So I ended up doing that. It ended up taking me 2.5 years, I think, instead of 4 years, and halfway through that I decided to transfer my apprenticeship to another bakery so that I had more experience than just one independent bakery. But that's when I got my qualification, and in all honesty, it's not that I chose to do it or as a life dream, it was more that I fell into it. And that's what I start finding, looking back now, that most of my things that happen in my life, I fall into it. Also, the bakery, I was training a lot of people. Any new junior or senior that came on board, I was naturally teaching them, because I was naturally a trainer, that I'd naturally give it in an analytical and methodical and easy to understand way, because it's just how my brain works. Yeah, versus my sister, she might be more similar to you, very left brain, arty-farty, high in the sky, couldn't tell you something in a system if it killed her.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like I'm kind of sitting in the middle somewhere, because earlier when you were speaking about Leonie and you were saying that she was really creative in an artistic kind of way, and you're definitely creative too, it's just in a different way. And, you know, my brother is also an artist, you know, that's what he does for a living. He works at the gallery and at the NGV, and he spends his time outside of that working painting, and he has exhibitions, and he was always the artist. And so I was a bit confused by that because I was kind of like, well, you know, I'm creative too, just mine is more about communication. It took me a very long time to figure that out because I also have another brother who's an academic. So, and he was just born like that, you know. So I had these two brothers who were so clearly who they were from day dot. And I found myself very confused about where I sat into it because it was like, yeah, I'm creative because I have this incredible brain that just is constantly working, often exhausting myself. And a huge part of my anxiety comes from the overactive mind. And, you know, I was a bit the same. I was a book kid, but I was also, there were other ways that I expressed my creativity through dancing and singing. And, but I always wanted to be the artist and I just never was. And the other thing I was going to say just about the system stuff, like, and why I asked that question before was because when I started working at the radio station, I was working for a tyrant. Like, I've never worked for a nastier person in my life. He's a chapter in my book, actually. And interestingly, it was due to him that I became more of a systems person than I am. It doesn't come naturally to me, but now I understand. But then again, it kind of does because creativity works in different ways, right? And so for you and I, because I feel like there is elements of me in you and there's elements of me in Leonie too. So it's like, yeah, I'm creative in some ways, but my brain also works like you. So it's like I can see something and then I can see a better way to do it. And so I'll do it the better way. And the systems come from really a need to ease my own anxiety, a way for me not to have to think about what's next because it's there, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I can't wait to read that chapter in your book as well, like the asshole boss, oh right?
Out of control. I had a few, but this guy was like next level.
Oh, God. Insane. Oh, God, yuck. Yeah, like I struggled with the word artist in inverted commas. Well, I still do, to be honest, but that's, you know, that's self-awareness or self-issue. And even the word writer, even the word blogger, like I really struggle giving myself any of these titles, trainer, teacher, coach. Like I really struggle with any of these titles because I don't consider myself, but that doesn't mean I am. So, for example, when I decorated cakes, and this was bakery-style cakes. I don't know if anyone's into cake decorating, but very basic, and it's, you know, buttercream or malt cream, and you push it out of a piping bag, right? Somebody saw me pushing icing out of a piping bag and they're like, oh, fancy icing, you're all creative and stuff, look at you go. You can't get any simpler than that. That's the most least creative way. But somebody else considered me creative, so therefore I am, whether I consider myself not. That was based on my preconceived ideas. So same as, you know, the word artist, my sister could paint better than me, so therefore she was the artist and I was not. Incorrect. Same as a writer. Now, I filled in a survey, let's say about a year ago, and it said, how many blog posts have you published in the last year? And I went, I thought, oh, that'll be a fun exercise. I'll go add them up. 200.
Wow.
200 in a year. I'm like, now that's strange. I don't call myself a blogger. I never considered it up to that point. And then I'm like, I think I might be a blogger.
I think you might be a prolific blogger, not just a blogger.
To be fair, not all of them were mine, probably 50-60%. The rest were contributing writers, but, you know, I still got to put work into them. And same as the word writer. My sister was always the writer, so therefore I am not in my mind, but completely untrue. I write daily, like I journal daily and I write blog posts daily. Is that not a writer? Yeah, so it's all how we see ourselves, whether it's based on fact or not.
Totally. And sometimes we just put, like, because we can't really, I don't know, step into one. So it's like writer, speaker, teacher, mentor, guide, blah, blah.
Creator, creative. Yeah. So then it goes on to multi-passionate. But then what the fuck does that mean? All right, so bakery. I finished the bakery and I was a qualified baker pastry cook. They didn't need me as a qualified. They signed me off. I'm like, sweet, what's next? I didn't really say that. It was more that the next place that ended up, it kind of fell in my lap. My brother was going through a divorce at that time. He had two really young kids. 2-year-old and 3-year-old from memory, and he lived 2 hours away. And I think he asked me to see if I wanted to move in with him to help him look after his kids, so that way he could get more custody of his kids because he worked split shifts. And I had nothing else going on, so all right, sure. So I moved in with my brother. So again, I kind of just fell into it. And seeing as I was there and, you know, we had the kids maybe 2 weeks out of every four, I'm like, well, I can do something else. So I'll start a cleaning business. I'll just start cleaning houses. So as soon as I booked out within, I don't know, not long, couple of weeks and something like that. And I got to help raise his kids, which was a really special experience. But then 6 months later, he broke up with his girlfriend and she had started a home daycare business. And she's kind of like, Rebecca, do you want it? So again, I just fall into, you know, whatever my next thing is. I'm, all right then. So I stopped the house cleaning and went home daycare business because I had to look after my brother's kids anyway, now that he had no girlfriend as well. And by that stage, I'd also started nannying another lady's two kids, 4 days on, 4 days off. My brother's two kids, 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off. But that was about, like, I don't know, 8 days in that month that I had nothing to do. So I thought, okay, well, I can have more kids. So I ended up building up that home daycare business. So I had 10 kids a day, 5 days per week, and most of them were under 2 years old.
Jesus.
They were all in nappies. 80% were in nappies. That's a lot of nappy changes.
Oh, my God. And that's a lot of, I mean, that's a lot of screaming and a lot of, like, no. That's just, like, my worst nightmare. One is enough for me. I'm not going back for seconds. And when I go to Helene's, like, Mabel's daycare, you know, it's like, yeah, I'm just like, how do you do that? How do you, yeah.
It was the best fun because, again, I still hadn't found myself, in inverted commas, that I was still kind of just looking for my way in life. I was still very shy, very quiet. I was single at that stage. I was single for 3 years at that stage. And kids-wise, I loved it because I got to put something else in front of me. I prioritized something else, which I always did. It was always, you know, my brother with disability. It was always the baby sister. It was always, you know, my granddad with leukemia. There was always other priorities. So it was always a front that there was other people that were more important than me. So I put them in front of me, and that, you know, built up a barrier and a wall that I didn't have to put myself out there. I didn't have to figure something out or find myself or, you know, talk about Rebecca and what Rebecca wants in life. It was always a wall between me and the outside. So the kids became my wall. I had great fun. Doing it wrong, it was very hard work. And there wasn't, you know, employees too, which I should point out, that there was always another lady and myself with the 10 kids. In school holidays, there was up to 14 kids. That's how many we could have with two employees. That was school age, so that were fine. but, yeah, so I'd have a heap of kids. And that lasted, I think, 2 years, the home daycare. And then my brother was moving. So I was like, oh, all right. And I just started seeing my boyfriend at that stage. So I ended up moving in with him. So, again, I just kind of like fall into the next thing. And so I moved town again, and I ended up doing disability support work and working with people with disabilities because of obviously life experience with my brother with cerebral palsy. He had actually died when I was a teenager from a farmyard accident. But my mum was always working with people with disabilities. She's a support worker, and my other sister is a social worker as well. So it's kind of just natural within us that we care with people with disabilities and the elderly. So I ended up getting a certificate for disability work while working with people with disabilities, and then me and the boyfriend broke up. And so it was like, all right, well, where am I falling to next? Because it's not like, you know, I choose any of this. And I ended up moving to the other side of the world, on the other side of the planet, to England by myself with nobody, knew nobody, and
wow,
no idea. Yeah.
Oh, really, my God. Extreme. And like, as a pretty quiet, shy person, that would have been incredibly challenging.
I don't know why. I started looking for jobs online, and then one showed up, and I had a Skype interview, and they're like, oh, it's in England, and, you know, your job's guaranteed. You just got to show up for training. I'm like, all right then, I'll get a passport. I don't know why I decided that, being, yeah, so incredibly shy. But, England was a major learning curve. So I ended up living there for a year, and I was an on-call carer for people with disabilities, which was quite challenging. What it meant was, you know, if one of their carers, so these were people who had full-time living carers, so quite extreme disabilities. So if you're talking spinal injuries, motor neuron disease, multiple sclerosis, people that were in wheelchairs, couldn't walk, had harnesses and swings, you know, had peg feeds, being they were fed via their belly, like very, they needed full-time living carers. So I was an on-call carer, being that without any training on that person and their disability, some of them have speech impairment, some of them have can't talk, they're non-verbal. I would just be put into a situation and, you know, look after it until they could replace me, essentially, for an indefinite period of time. So that was quite challenging, but at the same time, so incredibly rewarding. I met some amazing people, some amazing clients doing that. And through doing that, I'd work in an office when I wasn't in with clients, and working with those office staff and, you know, just finally finding me, in all honesty. Like, I had no front. There was nothing in between me and people. That, you know, I had the kids previously. I had the bakery, so I was working nighttime, so I didn't need to talk to people. And even before that, it was customer service. Like, you know, it was the bakery rack between me and people. Like, I'm just an employee. I'm not putting myself out there for people to see me or judge me or anything like that. So I started taking little trips around England and drive myself around and go where I wanted to go and do what I want to do, and then, you know, go to Denmark and then do a Kentucky tour and did, I don't know, 12 different countries in 2 weeks, something like that. And I went for a trip to Glastonbury, to Avalon. If, you know, any hippie woo-woo people are listening, it's the bomb. And my sister had told me to go there, of course. And I went up to the top of the tour and up to the top of the mountain, and I'm sitting there looking out of the world. And something happened there where when I came home from England, when I finally decided to come home, I realized I'd become such a strong person. I was now 29, nearly 30. I realized I'd had quite a hard life, being poverty childhood and a brother that had died, plus a heap of other stuff. I'd had a very hard life and I was incredibly strong. I'd gotten through all of that. I had these amazing life experiences. I've had heaps of different businesses that I had created, either from scratch or virtually from scratch, and that was successful. And not only that, I'd been to England by myself, where I knew freaking no one, and lived there for a year, which that's a great life story, I think. But after a year, I was getting a bit homesick and wanted to come home. So I came home and lived at mummy and daddy's, because what else do you do when you're 30, right? Single, broke, unemployed, and living with my parents. That is the beginning of my story of okay, and the new life.
Yeah. There must be something that happens at that time, like at that age or something, because that was when I was, I guess, I wasn't diagnosed until maybe a year or two later, but that's definitely where my depression started at that point too. It was like a huge transformational period, those late 20s to early 30s. It's like the bubble burst big time, big stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's where your story begins.
And that's, in all honesty, where my story begins. I've been falling all over the place, and in a sense, what I was doing next without making a choice, and being so incredibly shy. But I come home and I'm like, all right, what do I want to do? And I really, really did not want to work for somebody else. The agency that support people with disabilities and the elderly in England, the manager of the place had never cared for another human being in her life. She was, you know, 60s to 70s. She's an accountant, essentially. She was a numbers person. And honestly, when you're caring for other human beings, got nothing to do with freaking numbers. Well, that should be like 1% of the equation. Like, if they're a high care person, I don't care what you think, they should be paid, like the carers. That's a high care situation. you try being in it. Like, one of my clients was newly diagnosed with motor neuron disease, and he died while I was there as well. So it was a very quick, disability, I suppose. And they were trying to pay the least amount for him. And he would wake up during the night. He was immobile. He couldn't move his arms. He couldn't move his head. He ended up being nonverbal because his mouth would no longer work, and he would be choking and coughing and spluttering during the night, choking on his own spit, and he couldn't move. So you would be I was up 20 times, I think I counted one night, so zero sleep as well as a full day of work. And that for somebody to turn around and go, you know, that it's worth X number of dollars, and bullshit. Yeah. So after leaving that type of admin situation and office situation, going, that makes absolutely no sense whatsoever for people in the field doing the actual work. I very much didn't want to work for somebody else. And I decided to go back to cake. So being, you know, I finished my apprenticeship 6 years early. I hadn't worked in a bakery or worked with food since. I'm like, I might sell some cakes. I don't need much money. I'm living at mum and dad's, I don't have bills, don't have rent, don't have mortgage. So I started selling cakes at the markets. And that, again, is another business. So I'm selling food from home. And I really, really enjoyed it. So I started selling at the markets. I started getting wholesale orders and like birthday cake orders and things like that. And then I got ridiculously booked out about 6 months into business. So, and I was looking after or selling to a very large territory, about 250 kilometer radius. And I'm like, this is so ridiculously easy. I've got so many orders. I just want to give somebody else my orders because it's money. Why would I say no to money? But I just can't do it all. So I'll just give money to somebody else. And I was incredibly stressed 6 months into it, and I was having sleepless nights trying, all right, how am I going to do all this work? Because by this stage I was working 7 days a week, 12 hours a day, so what's that? I don't know, 80 hours per week, something stupid. Hadn't watched TV in months. But I loved it because I love work. I'm a natural workaholic. It doesn't occur to me to stop because both my parents are workaholics, and that's something I've actually struggled with a lot in the last couple of years. I've got a lot better with it. But that's when I come up with the idea to franchise. I'm like, all right, I know how to start a home cake business. I know how to get it booked out really quickly and make money from cakes. I should just teach somebody else how to do that. So then the trainer come in that I can teach somebody in a natural, logical way that makes sense, easy to understand. I can teach them cake decorating because, again, you know, I'm a qualified baker pastry cook and I'd done that for years. I'd already taught heaps of people how to do it. I knew how to do it. It just wasn't, you know, it came naturally. And I was confident within that skill and that fact. So I had built up my confidence. And not only that, with Angel Foods, the cake business, I had to put myself out there. Yes, I put cakes between me and the people out there, but I had to go to the markets and I had to sell my cakes. My cakes were not going to sell themselves. So I would call out to people, say, you know, do you want a free sample of cake? They'd come down. I'd give a little, you know, sales pitch saying, hey, we've got these on special today. This is a new flavor. You know, there's a competition if you want to enter. And worst comes to worst, they can walk away with a business card. So I was practicing pitches and sales and marketing all the time, which I just didn't realize. So franchising, I'm like, I'll franchise. That's brilliant. I love it. All right, I can do that. So I started ringing around for a franchise lawyer, and they all told me it was impossible. Unless you've been in business for 2 years with 2 years worth of, you know, financial records, not only that, you need a highly experienced solicitor. It costs a minimum of $40,000 to get, you know, the franchise set up. Yeah, $40,000 a night. I found out that I actually really don't do well with people telling me that I can't do something, because I'll do the direct opposite of that. So I'm like, screw you, hippies. I'm sure I can do this. So I Googled it, found a DIY franchise kit, $99, downloaded all the legal documents. I had a long weekend coming up. It must have been Easter weekend. Got it all done in 40 hours in that 4 days off. And within a month or two, I'd sold my first franchise. I'm like, it's not that hard, people. You're making it harder. You're putting up the blocks. So then the next 2 years, I ended up franchising nationally, Australia-wide, sold 12 franchises as well as selling cakes. And then in the meantime, I'm like, all right, the franchisees, I need to teach cake decorating. If I shot video tutorials, then I can teach them all at once. That would be a lot smarter. So I shot a heap of video tutorials at the same time. So bear in mind, I was already working 7 days a week and, you know, 12 hours a day. I'm like, I can squeeze in some video tutorial recordings. That's fine. So I spent $10,000 over the next 4 months. I think it was 26 video tutorials I created, but they were very high quality. Like I got in a video photographer and a video editor and things like that. But I recreated these really awesome high quality videos, jammed them on my website for sale individually as well. And then I decided, oh, what I should do to get more franchisees is write an ebook, and then that would be a lead generation tool that they're obviously interested in starting cake business, and I can totally talk to them about franchising. So I'll write an ebook, in my already full week. So I did that within a month because that's what people do, right? I don't think they do, but I do. I do. I think it was November 2012, I wrote the e-book. I packaged it together, bundled together all the video tutorials and, you know, my recipes, obviously. And then December, I found a website developer at the same time to do a sales website and add it to the shopping cart and all that jazz. Did a bit of Facebook advertising, and within 1 month, I'd sold, I think, $6,000 worth of that book, and I think it was for sale for $47, something like that.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so this is less than or 2 years or since starting the cake business, that I'd gone fully booked out, that I'd franchised, that I shot a whole heap of video tutorials, and then I wrote an ebook and sold that. So then, what fell on my path? Hottie boyfriend. So I was single doing all of this and childless too. So hats off to mums out there as well, because I don't know how you do it. Then hottie boyfriend fell on my path, and he lived 1,200 kilometres away and he had a daughter. So I thought, he's hot, I'll follow him. No, I ended up moving in with him 12 months later just to see how it goes. And, you know, 4 years later, he's still hot. So I moved town. So moving town, I decided not to continue selling cakes and instead concentrate on franchising and the video tutorials and the online aspect. So I've been doing that ever since, and it's been the best fun. So it's been such a huge learning curve, and I've failed epically so many times. So many tears. I've worked full time for probably 2.5 years of that. For various reasons. One, my business wasn't sustainable, being that it wasn't consistent income. And also another reason was we wanted to buy a house and I needed a full-time income, a paycheck to get a bank loan. So we did achieve that in the last 2 months. And it honestly took years to get to where it is today. Today, well, 6 months ago, I quit my full-time job and went all in on my business. That month, I earned $4,000 for the month, and it's increased around 10% every month, that I'm now earning nearly $7,000 per month with my online business. So it's more digital products and online and blogging stuff. And just this last month, I also retired my boyfriend from his job with this. And those have been really big, really big life dreams, really.
So what made you take the leap from the full-time job? Because I know that was probably a pretty huge decision to make. And you were working ridiculous hours.
Yeah. When we decided that, you know, I would need to work because my business wasn't earning enough, I had to get really, really ridiculously selfish with my time, being, all right, if I want to keep Angel Foods and continue and get, you know, I have this dream for it, I have this belief, it is unwavering, I am not willing to give up. You know, I've got to get selfish with my time, and I've got to prioritize my time. So I tried lots of different time slots, but essentially what ended up working best for me was getting up at 5 a.m. every day and 2 hours of what I call content creation time, which is Angel Foods time before I go to my job. I tried evening work, but I'm brain fried at the end of the day and ridiculously unproductive, where I was highly productive at the beginning of the day, but I wouldn't have known that without trying it out, essentially, and testing and tweaking and repeating, and also at every single stage, lots and lots of conversations with the boyfriend. How is he feeling? How am I feeling? That, you know, we were having enough relationship time and all of that jazz and happiness level and blah, blah, blah. So I would get up at 5 a.m. every day, 2 hours of content creation time, go to the full-time job. In my lunch hour, I would be journaling or a video, either a Facebook Live or a recording video. And in the evenings, nothing. Like, it was boyfriend time. That was scheduled boyfriend time of, you know, spending time with him. Like, I'd come home to a hot meal because he finished an hour earlier than me. So damn straight, he should have a hot meal.
Yeah.
And then we talk about our days. Then we have a bathtub. And then, again, I'm single and childless. People, I'm not single but childless. So I can do this. And then go to bed early. I have always loved going to bed at 8 p.m. We do that, and that is
I don't get people who are working till 2 o'clock in the morning. It's just like, definitely not productive for me. and not something that I want, right? Because one thing that I know from your story is that you've said it already, like you are naturally a hard worker, and so, you know, you will work and work and work and work. So you have to have strong boundaries in place, right? And I know when I started Killer Copy, the reason that I got to the point where I needed to start outsourcing some stuff was literally because I was working 16 hours a day and it sucked. Mm. That's not fun. Nobody wants to do that. I don't care who you are. You really, if you're really honest with yourself, I can't imagine anyone really wanting to work that much. And so, you know, I put on my editor to help me have some time for myself so that I could just, well, there wasn't Netflix around in those days, but, you know, laze around and watch Foxtel.
Yeah.
Or whatever, yeah. You know, and it took a lot to put boundaries around that. And my rules were if it couldn't happen within business hours, it just didn't happen. So my, you know, it was very strict on not working between 9 and 5. It didn't mean that I had to be working between 9 and 5, but work wasn't to happen outside of those hours. And I had to create all those boundaries, you know, and put those boundaries in place with clients and stuff. Things definitely changed for me when Mabel came on the scene, because then I was having to work around her, not, yeah, it just gets a lot more messy when you add that level in, for sure. So how about you, like with the boundaries and stuff? How have you made that work?
That is a hard, hard lesson. I've collapsed from burnout and exhaustion. I'll go 3 times from memory. Gee, they were hard. Sorry, back Angel Foods time and the caking and doing everything. I decided to do like a bridal expo in there. So it's kind of like booking a show which goes for either 1 full day or 2 full days in there as well. And I'd never done a bridal show, so I had to have display cakes and samples and just figure out everything from beginning to end on top of everything else. And I was trying desperately to just like keep my feet under myself on that hamster wheel. And I just lost it. I lost my shit. I lost my cool. Not only that, at the same time, because I was so ridiculously busy, I had to start making the decision that somebody else do the markets for me, that they shop and sell the cakes for me, which I really struggled with giving away that control. So I was in tears at that decision. And then at the bridal expo, wedding expo, again, I was just losing my shit over making this decision that I couldn't go. When I really wanted to do it, it would be a great marketing strategy. It would make a difference to my business. What would the difference be? More work, which I already had enough. And I just couldn't get past that. So one day I was baking whoopies. I don't know if you've heard of whoopie pies, but they're cake and cream and it's amazing. And mum had come out to help me because I had another lady that helped me, but she couldn't show up that day. So I asked mum to help me because I was pretty much peaking out or maxing out at my work capacity. I just, please show up, mum. I just need somebody there. And then I started sliding down the cupboard wall. I'm like, something's wrong. Something's wrong. So I'm getting teary at the thought of it. And I just couldn't hold myself up. I'm falling down. And mum's like, you all right? I'm like, no, really not. She's like, okay. Come with me. And she picks up a pillow and a blanket and, you know, pulls me on the way out, and she puts me pillow and blanket on the grass outside. And I could not move. I could not feel my extremities. I couldn't feel my arms and legs. I couldn't open my eyes. I couldn't move. And I laid there for 2 hours. I couldn't move. I had my brother come with his kids and they just like be around me, and they're like, what are you doing? I can't move. And they're like, okay, then. And they just went and do whatever they did. Like, I couldn't get up to welcome, like somebody come to visit. I couldn't get up to talk to him. I couldn't do anything. And I just felt rubbish, like complete dirt. And it's because I could not tell myself to stop working, to slow down, to relax. It's not within my DNA to just sit and relax. I just, like, I hadn't watched TV in months. I don't enjoy TV, to be fair, but to sit and relax just seems incredibly lazy, and that's exactly the opposite of who I am. But for the next 2 weeks, it took me 2 weeks to recover from that. It felt like essentially a truck had hit me, like a flu, but no other flu-like symptoms, just feeling complete, incredibly dirt. And again, I didn't learn my lesson. About a couple of months later, I was sitting at the computer and I had a massive chest pain, but in the back, like a stabbing pain. I'm like, oh, I just kind of was paralyzed with the pain. It was so intense. And I had the work phone beside me, so I picked that up and rang Dad. He was in the back shed. My dad, come get me. You've got to take me to hospital. So he took me to hospital. I had pneumonia without any cough, without any flu-like symptoms. The doctor had never heard of it. So I'd brought pneumonia on through my workaholic tendencies, and he prescribed bed rest. And I, do you have any idea how much work I've got to do? And it was kind of, there was one or two more instances, but it kept happening. But essentially, I don't have boundaries. I did not have any personal boundaries. And it wasn't until, honestly, the boyfriend came along that he was a natural boundary, that, he would want to spend time with me. He's very good at communicating. We talk a lot. And, he wants to spend time with me. So I just prioritized time to spend with him. And then also his daughter. We have his daughter, well, at the moment it's weekly, and it previously used to be fortnightly for 2 nights. We would prioritize that time with his daughter. That was work-free time. I really struggled with that, but I ended up being a better human being, a better caregiver, a better girlfriend, just better, full stop. And not only that, I found it over time that I was still creating the same amount of work. I was just doing it better and more productively with the natural stopping point. So I couldn't create them. It was through family that I had, a boyfriend and his daughter that I found stopping points. Otherwise, I don't know. I would have found them naturally, per se.
Well, something would have happened. Another incident, perhaps.
Yeah. Back to hospital, apparently. I'm a slow learner.
Yeah. No, I think we all are. I ended up at the hospital my doctor's surgery about 4 weeks ago with heart pain, and thought I was having a heart attack, but it was anxiety due to me pushing and pushing and pushing so hard, prioritizing status and money over my well-being and just incredibly stressed. So one thing that I kind of wanted to ask you was, maybe it's related to this, and that is, having watched your journey over the last few years, I know that it hasn't all been easy. And that, there were a few, I don't know whether it was a couple of years or whatever, where I felt like you were, I don't know. I think we've all felt sometimes like we're doing all the work and it's not being returned to us in the way that it probably should. Actually, that's what led me to the hospital. having the ECG, because I was doing all the things that I was supposed to be doing and I just wasn't seeing the results. And then something shifted for you. And I don't know whether it was you prioritizing you or what, but things started to change. Do you think there was a catalyst or not a lightning bolt, but was there something that shifted for you?
There's nothing that I can think of at the top of my head, but I can talk through it and see if I have an aha moment. Yes, I with Angel Foods and the company and digital products and blah, 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 I'd do something, let's say a launch, and it would fail or have very small results, or would fail epically, like just somewhere on the spectrum, but just it was never enough. It was never huge enough. And that was especially when I joined B School and finally found people that were similar to me and opened my eyes to the communities. Before that, I had no idea there was other people like me. I was completely by myself, or thought I was. So, yeah, I'd read about, the $100,000 launches, and I'd just be banging my head against a brick wall going, well, I make $2,000. Where do I stand? And I'm like, well, I must be shitting dirt. So, every time I take a step, it would feel like 10 steps back. Yeah, and then the feeling rubbish about myself for the rubbish results in inverted commas, when in all honesty, they were actually really good results. I wasn't giving credit where credit was due. So then I would stop doing what had just got actual good results, but I was calling them bad results. I would stop doing them, and then I would go, well, nobody's valuing my stuff. I'm not getting the exchange of energy for so much that I'm putting into the world. Where's this exchange? What's up, big you, like big universe? And in all honesty, it was working, just I wasn't giving it the time and attention. One thing that did make a difference was I heard one piece of advice: what isn't measured can't be improved. And this is the money mindset thing that I was so busily hustling and chasing my ass and, you know, for a dollar, that I, but then when I received a dollar, I would not give it the time and attention. Like, I would not say thank you for this dollar. Like,
you'd be like, where's the next one?
yeah, chasing the next dollar rather than just saying thank you for this dollar. So when I heard what isn't measured can't be improved, and I was talking to my boyfriend about something or other, and he asked me a very simple question: how much did you earn last month? And I'm like, I have no idea. He said, what do you mean you have no idea? I haven't done my bookkeeping. I haven't done it for a year. He's like, well, that's not good enough. I'm like, really? Because I think it is, because my accountant's like over a year behind themselves. So even if I got my bookkeeping done and sent that to my accountant would not do it for a year. And he goes, that's not good enough. I'm like, ah. I'd never thought about it that way. So I was too busy chasing my ass and being all creative and new ideas, and then, you know, I'll launch a next thing, a big thing that I'm doing. I didn't stop to take note of where I am right now, and only that give credit to where it was. So this was like 2014 or 2015, I can't recall. But that saying came up at the same time: what isn't measured can't be improved. So if I wasn't measuring my bookkeeping, being money in, money out, and, you know, gross and net income, then how is it going to improve if I have no idea where I currently stand? It's like, yes, I want more money, but if I earn an extra dollar, that is more money. So the big you was listening. So that was kind of a major face palm moment. So starting doing not only bookkeeping, but anything else I wanted to, you know, improve. So email subscribers, how much did I want to improve in 12 months? How much do I want to improve in, you know, this month? So then I could make logical strategies and processes and to-do lists to hit those, to hit what I want to improve, essentially. That kind of was a turning point. And then also I realized that those numbers from doing my bookkeeping, those numbers, those, you know, small sales, like let's say $50, $1,000, $2,000, the most I ever made from a launch in inverted commas was $2,000. That ebook, the first one in 2012 that I told you about, minus Facebook ads and minus the website development, was about $3,000, the most I've ever made in a sale. But I never gave credit to them. So when I started following my numbers, going, hey, that is actually working, how can I concentrate on doing this more and being more frequently rather than, you know, once or twice per year? If I do that monthly, will that not make a difference? So it really did make a difference after that. And in all honesty, my business has never had any bigger launch than $3,000. It still hasn't. But what I did was I stacked up the things that were making a difference in my business. Like, I, like, logically and thoughtfully, when this is making money, even if it's $50, give attention to it and, you know, be thankful for it. So that is the difference.
Yeah, cool. So what's next for you?
That's a good question. Happiness, staying happy. it has been rough the past few years. We've had custody issues with my boyfriend's daughter, and that's been one of the changes in momentum. Going, well, I can control so little in this life. I want to work in my business. I do not want to work for somebody else. So, you know, that's how I quit my full-time job. So it's staying self-employed, and you know, whether my boyfriend does or doesn't, that's completely his choice. But doing what I love every day, which is self-employed, waking up when I want, journaling, creating daily. Journaling daily, writing daily, blogging daily. Honestly, it's the best freaking fun. So if I'm doing this in 5 years' time, 10 years' time from now, that will be the bee's knees.
Time to kick up your feet and relax. It's on the couch. Biggest fear?
Failure. Yeah, I think that resonates for a lot of people, that it always has been and always will be failure. But even though I know that fear isn't valid in the sense that there is no evidence that I am a failure, that it is false evidence appearing true, failure for me is something I really, really believe in, is it is one step closer to success. I am fine with failure just when I'm feeling a lower energy. That's when the failure can creep in, but it's false evidence appearing true. There's no evidence supporting that fact.
Yeah, so true. Mm. And, you know, for me, I mean, I've had a lot, dealt a lot with failure, and it's something that has really interested me for I guess the last 5 years. What I've realized is that, you know, it's just Failure is nothing until we add our spin on it, you know. Mm. And so for me, I wrote in my shop speak up group, you know, that I wanted to do the webinar about failure, and some people were kind of triggered by that because they don't want to focus on failure because what you focus on, you create. But for me, I don't see failure as a negative thing anymore. I did when I started this podcast, absolutely, because I'd just come out of the biggest failure of my life, and it became my failure. But now I just see it as such a gift, you know, and each really? One comes to me and it's like, thank you.
Yeah.
Which is absolutely. So bizarre. Mm. but it's like, you know, most that failure is one thing that I see stop people from starting again and again and again and again. And part of me wants to say, no, just like go for it, like fail as much as you can. Because, oh, yeah. you know, I don't know, for me, it's been like the hugest gift. Because without that, there's no way I'd be sitting here writing a book. You know, mm. I'd always yeah. wanted to write a book, but I had nothing to write about. And now I have this like huge, I don't know, story that I'm writing. And a lot of it is about that. It's about that idea of just you fail and you're so afraid of it, but then it happens and we're okay, right? Like yeah. we're totally okay.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I love that so much. Like I do firmly, firmly believe that failure is one step closer to success. The only actual true failure is when you give up. Don't get me wrong. Don't flog a dead horse. If it's dead, it's dead. And it doesn't, you do need to move on. But it is one step closer. You will never get your first step perfect. It's like expecting a child to get up and run. They've got to fall over. They've got to smack their face to learn not to do that.
Yeah. Totally. What's your biggest struggle at the moment?
At the moment, motivation and inspiration moving forward, being that I love having big dreams, right? I do have big dreams, and I love turning them into goals, and then I like just love smashing them out and making shit happen. It's my natural skill set. Like my belief is kind of like unwavering that if I say I'm going to do something, if I write it down in my journal, if I create a goal, it is as good as done. All I have to do is the work, but it is done. It is a thing. It is going to come to life. So one of them was, you know, working full time in my business. Another was retiring my boyfriend from his job that my company fully supports our both of us with wages and our mortgage. And then my next big dream was that we buy a farm and live in a farm. So second piece of real estate that we can have a hobby farm, sheep farm, something like that, because we're both country people. And that was my next big dream. And we've just had more custody stuff, essentially went to court. And there's going to be no resolution for the next 2 years. And we're kind of hoping, you know, maybe in the next 12 months. So I feel like that kind of dream has been taken away from me. So I'm trying to find the motivation, inspiration. If that dream is now gone, what is my next dream? And I'm kind of struggling finding that dream right now.
Yeah. Mm. And that's okay too. You know, yeah. I just spoke at the Soul Sister Circle a couple of weeks ago on the Gold Coast, and it's so interesting because I've been through this whole thing where I had something similar, not similar but similar, in that I had this big dream. And then the dream kind of came crashing around me due to not really anything within my control. And it was so hard to take. Like it was really, it felt unfair and I felt kind of betrayed and, you know, there's a whole lot of stuff going on there. Mm. But now, like I moved through it very quickly and now I can see that what is for me is not going to go by me. What is because this is where I need to be right now. Mm-hmm. And that, like, I think before now I would have taken that as a very hard pill to swallow because it would have just been like, no, fuck you, universe. You know? Yeah. But now I'm kind of like, well, you know, okay, it's not the end of the world. This is going to be okay. I'm where I need to be. And then I just am like, I'm where I need to be.
I think that's where I'm at. I need to remind myself there is a reason. I always trust there is a reason that I am meant to be here right now. So I'm meant to be in indecision land and not getting that thing.
Yeah, and that's okay. And it's hard when you're a doer and a creator, right? Because you're like, no, there has to be another way. There has to be, you know, it's possible, you know. But, yeah, but sometimes I think we just have to lean back into that place of surrender and be like, okay, well, this is what it is right now. And yeah, that's fucking hard.
Yeah. Release. Yeah, that's true.
So we already talked failure. So I don't think I really need to ask you that question because, you know, we kind of know that failure is just one more step closer to success. What's the evil bitch in your head kind of say to you? Do you have one? And what does she say?
For the most part, I don't think I do. I'm one of the most positive people I know. I can turn anything possibly negative into a positive. I'm kind of like Pollyanna like that. Sometimes the evil bitch that I'm not enough, that I need to be more, but that's only when low energy, really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what does success mean to you now?
That's a good question. Now, like it used to be money, being that, you know, that would be a sign of success. But in all honesty, with everything, it's being healthy and happy. Because in all honesty, everything, including success, comes from that. So, you know, a healthy and happy relationship, a healthy and happy business, healthy, happy me. Like everything comes from me being okay and healthy and happy.
Yeah. And lastly, freedom. What does that mean to you?
Freedom is choice, that I get a choice in this world versus lack of choices that's taken from me. So I get to choose what time I wake up. I get to choose how I use my body, like where I move to and what I do during the day and how I use my brain. Choice is a very powerful word to me.
Totally.
The plug. Instead of filling the podcast with self-promotion, we're being totally transparent. Here's the plug.
So everything about me, I suppose, is at RebeccaAllen.com in the sense that I created, that's a fairly new website in the last, I don't know, 4 months, that it is me being the journalist of my life. So sharing my journals, sharing my experiences, my ups and downs, my wins, my fails, so many fails. That's where I get to be most free, and any lessons that I learn in blogging and business and in life, and it essentially is at RebeccaAllen.com.
The takeaway, exercises or tips for positive change, sprinkled with salt and vinegar, wrapped in newspaper and handed over the counter from our special guest to you.
I reckon don't give up. That, like we said, failure is one step closer to success. The only thing I would consider failure is giving up. And again, don't flog a dead horse, but
don't give up on you, I think, is the key, right? Like, yeah. I mean, having walked away from a lot of things, I don't see those as failures because they weren't serving me at the time. And so, you know, it feels like that is the give up, right? It's not that you're giving up what you do, but giving up on who you are.
Yeah. I like that. You said that better. Yeah.
Thanks. You said it good too. Well, thanks so much for chatting with me today. It's been so nice to actually have a chat, you know, like we've been friends online for a long time and we've never, you know, not that this is in the flesh because that will happen too.
Yeah.
But, you know, just sit down and have a nice chat. It's so nice. So thank you for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Right back at you. Thank you, Carly.
No worries.
Thanks for tuning into Carlosophies. If you really dug this app, I'd love for you to share it with someone who you think might also dig it. Really helps me to spread the word. And if you'd like to get to know me a little better and see some in-between app thoughts and insights and be around some super cool people, join my Facebook tribe, Show Up Speak Up. Search Show Up Speak Up in Facebook or head to carlynimmo.com/tribe. Until next time, be real, be rad. Peace out.